Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Maria Auler, financial analyst for Intersemente, and with me here today for a first cycle is Paulo Diniz, our chief executive officer, and Marco Zangari, our chief financial officer. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session, and if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is available through the webcast link that has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. A reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call, or the financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intersemente operating activities, and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2023 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intersemente makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intersemente disclaims any obligation to update information contained in this forward-looking statement, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intersemente second quarter financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. Before I start our chat, I would like to emphasize management's decision to classify South Africa and Mozambique business segments as discontinued operations in accordance with International Accounting IFRS 5. As Intersemente has signed an SPA selling these operations to the Chinese company Huaxin Cement. Therefore, the respective assets and liabilities are presented as current in the balance sheet in a specific line item. In the profit of our loss statements, the results from those operations are also segregated in a specific line item. Nevertheless, considering that, for the time being, Intersemente continues to manage South African and Mozambican operations. You will note that on the earnings release and on this call, we are including and presenting Africa operations with the consolidated continuing operations, Brazil and Argentina. Having said all that, let me kick the ball here and ask you, Paulo, to give us a quick overview of Intersemente's second quarter.
Maria, Marco, and everyone, very good morning to you all. In a summarized way, the second quarter of this year continued to present the same challenges we faced in the first quarter. In other words, Argentina and Brazil continue to see an environment with high interest rates and inflation, especially in the case of Argentina. At the same time, some positive signs can be seen in the horizon, such as a potential more market-friendly government in Argentina, lower interest rates in Brazil, and decreasing petcoke costs. Nevertheless, we were very pleased with the resilience of our operations, Intersemente Brazil and Luma Negra, as the second quarter is likely to be the softest quarter of the year. In this second quarter, we posted a volume of almost 4.4 million tons, an increase of 8% compared to the first quarter of the year, but slightly below 2% below the volume booked in the second quarter of last year. Translating that into dollar, net sales reached $421 million in the quarter, so a drop of 14% in comparison to the same quarter of last year due to the shy construction market environment, further penalized by softer price dynamics in the southeast region of Brazil, while in Argentina, we faced a negative impact due to the higher monthly inflation figures and the timing of price adjustments. On the positive side, cash costs, including expenses, decreased 5.4% in the period, with all geographies showing a reduction in cost, reflecting the softening of fuel prices, especially petcoke, returning to the levels similar to those that we had in 2020. Extremely important point here. In fact, the average cash cost, including here freights, fell by 9% and reached $67 per ton. However, cost reduction was not enough to offset the weaker top line. And adjusted EBITDA reached $92 million, which represented a 31% decline over the second quarter of last year. And the EBITDA margin of 22% was 5 percentage points lower in comparison to the same period of last year. Based on this adjusted EBITDA, our operational cash flow came at $89 million, in comparison to the $141 million in the second quarter of last year. So positive free cash flow to firm of $44 million, which was $29 million below the second quarter of last year, was impacted by the shy adjusted EBITDA, partially offset by lower income tax that was paid. Consequently, as a result here, the free cash flow was negative in $9 million for the quarter, therefore a gap of $28 million compared to the second quarter of last year when it was positive in $19 million. Cash flow from financial activities was penalized by dividends paid by Luma Negra in the quarter, so $45 million, although there was also an inflow from a new debt based in Argentina, the $72 million coming from a Class 2 negotiable obligations that was issued. Therefore, net debt came at $1.6 billion, that is 13% higher than the fourth quarter of last year, further penalized by the 8% appreciation of the Brazilian real against the dollar, implying a leverage ratio of 3.8 times based on the last 12 months adjusted EBITDA. So in a nutshell, we see the second quarter as the lackluster quarter of the year, although we posted a volume sold of 4.4 million tons and an adjusted EBITDA of $92 million.
Thanks for this overview, Paulo. And when you talked about a top line of $421 million in the quarter, we are always curious about volumes and prices in the different geographies. Tangari, perhaps you can share some insights on this?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Maria, and good morning, everyone. As you said, sales reached $421 million as a result of a 1.5% reduction in volume, reaching 4.4 million tons in the quarter, combined with a stable average price at $88 per ton, as shown on page 7. And mainly the significant devaluation of the Argentine peso, 105%, and the rand, 21%, that also contributed to this sales reduction. Now, taking a look at the different perimeters, Brazil, the cement industry recorded a 2.8% decrease in the quarter, reflecting the context of high interest rate, household indebtedness, and lower real estate launches. Meanwhile, as shown on page 4, we see that Intercement Brazil reached volumes of cement and clinker of hopefully 2.2 million tons, representing a 2.8 decline in the quarter year on year, while cement sales were down by 2.2%, so slightly better than the overall industry performance due to the commercial strategy focused on portfolio optimization in a growing and widespread customer base. Money-wise, Intercement Brazil, reflecting the downturn in volume and price, reached sales of $180 million, a 6% decrease year over year. On the other hand, compared to the first quarter, revenue grew by 10%. Looking at the perimeter of Argentina, Loma Negra reflected the contraction in the bagged cement due to a reduction in demand from the retail segment, which was partially offset by the bulk cement segment on the back of solid demand for concrete by private construction and small-scale public works. Therefore, in this second quarter, Loma Negra posted a volume of 1.6 million tons, a decrease of 4% year over year, as shown on page 5. This contributed to a 22% retraction in revenue in US dollar terms, which also reflect the fact that inflation and the peso devaluation ended up accelerating ahead of the price adjustments. Now, in terms of the African cluster, given that we have divested the Egyptian operation last January, we have excluded it from the comments and the comparison base. Then, as you can see on page 6 of the presentation, volumes in Africa increased 9.6%. South Africa volumes increased by 16% year over year, but this growth was mostly due to the weak comparison base of last year, when the country was affected by floods that hit the main region of our operations. On the other hand, in Mozambique, volumes slightly contracted, mainly in the south, on the back of lower disposable income, pressured by higher inflation. It's also finally softening as we speak. Now talking about prices at our African operations. Our Ex Works prices reached an average of $92 per ton, down 6% year over year in dollar terms. Due to the 21% devaluation of the rand, the local currency in South Africa. So disregarding it, on a like-for-like basis, prices increased by 5% in the quarter compared to last year, following a similar pattern of price increases in local currency in both countries. However, this pricing movement was not enough to offset the rand devaluation, so sales decreased 5%. Excluding the Forex impact, sales would have grown 5%, as shown on page 7 as well.
Thank you, Zangari. It was clear that pricing was key to mold the company's shy top line. In addition to pricing, a closer management of costs is also very important in this high inflation, high interest environment. Paulo, how this challenge has affected Intercement's EBITDA generation?
Yep, as I mentioned before, average cash cost of $67 per ton represented a reduction of 9% in the quarter. Besides thermal energy costs, mainly petcoke costs, all other cost elements were compressed, including raw materials, freight, and electricity. Therefore, overall cost elements are starting to show a very encouraging trend. Unfortunately, this healthy cost performance was not enough to make up for the corrosive top line drop of 14%, as I mentioned before, which presented a volume drop of 2% in an average price of $88 per ton. Consequently, just the EBITDA margin came up 22%, a compression of 5% compared to the second quarter, based on the timid, on the shy operational performance of all regions, Brazil, Argentina, and Africa. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA came at $92 million in the quarter, which represented a drop of 31% in comparison to the second quarter of last year, although overall cost trend is very encouraging for the second half of the year. But just a quick word on each country. In Brazil, the volume compression of 3% was further magnified by the average price of $70 per ton, a drop of 4% in comparison to the second quarter of last year. Here, a key factor was the market dispute in the southeast region in Brazil by the two market leaders. And of course, price suffered. Therefore, InterCement Brazil EBITDA was at $37 million, a 23% drop when compared to the second quarter of last year, while EBITDA margins went from 25% to 20% in this second quarter. In Argentina, the context of high inflationary environment and not in parity with the FX variation resulted in a soft cement market with a 4% volume drop, which imposed an adjusted EBITDA of $43 million to Luma Negra, so a 39% free fall in the quarter, despite the excellent price level of $106 per ton. The adjusted EBITDA margin was at 23% in the quarter, a considerable reduction of 6 percentage points in comparison to the same quarter of last year. Finally, the of course, that in Argentina, inflation and FX variation does play a key role in the figures, especially inflationary adjustment, although in terms of cash flow, we do not see the debt distortion. Finally, despite the African cluster volume increase of 10% and better average prices in local currency, price fell in hard currency, imposing a 5% revenue drop. Consequently, just EBITDA of $10 million was 18% below the second quarter of last year, with EBITDA margins moving from 21% to 18% in the quarter.
Thanks, Paulo. Interesting to see that even in what you consider to be a shy quarter, volume came at 4.4 million tons and adjusted EBITDA at $92 million. So not that bad. And now moving to the below the lines results, let me ask you, Zangari, what can you say about the second quarter?
Well, Maria, as shown on page 11, in this quarter, the cash flow from operating activities benefited from some recovery amounting to $12 million of the increased working capital deployed last quarter in the context of the credit crunch in Brazil. However, CapEx disbursement was higher than last year due to compliance projects in Argentina and Brazil and higher maintenance needs in Argentina amounting to $37 million in total. On the other hand, we paid significantly lower income taxes that amounted to $8 million, posting a decrease of 77% due to lower taxable profit, mainly in Argentina, where deductible financial expenses increased.
Okay, and besides working capital moves, CapEx and taxes, any other movement below the line, including financial flows, that you could give us some additional color?
Oh, sure, Maria. As I was saying, given those operating results, our free cash flow to firm reached $44 million, worse than that in the second quarter last year by $29 million, which is better than our adjusted EBITDA reduction that amounted to $40 million in the quarter. we can also see on our cash flow that interest paid in the second quarter amounted to $57 million, corresponding to a decrease of $14 million year over year, driven by the postponement of interest payment of the debentures from June to September, which was partially offset by a higher debt position in Argentina to fund dividend payment and thus optimize the local capital structure. At the financing side, as we mentioned during our last earnings call, Loma Negra in May paid up $45 million of dividends. In addition to it, the Holdco settled the bilateral loan with HSBC amounting to $21 million. Additionally, Argentina issued new debts, $72 million of Class II negotiable obligations and $56 million of bilateral loans, and also amortized debts in the amount of $53 million. Reflecting all those cash movements, as shown on page 12, Intercement ended the first quarter, the second quarter, with a consolidated cash position of $171 million and a net debt of $1,637 million, posting an increase of 13% over our net debt position at the end of 2022. This was mostly driven by the Brazilian real appreciation, 7.6%, since the BRL is the currency of 54% of the total gross debt, and also by the payment of dividends and interest, mostly from Argentina and Holdco. As a result, Intercement posted a financial leverage of 3.8 times the last 12-month adjusted EBITDA.
Thank you, Zangari. Just great to see that, despite the existing limitations, Intercement continues to manage properly its cash flow, which included dividends payment by Loma Negra. Paulo, although I will not ask for any specific guidance, could you quickly share some of your views for the rest of the year, please?
Well, Maria, here comes my crystal ball again. So in Argentina, we are at a very important crossroad. The primary election showed surprising results, with Javier Milei leading the presidential run, followed by Patricia Bullrich and very, very close to Massa. However, more important than the results is the message conveyed by the population that they are fed up with the current politicians and government. Therefore, a renovation towards a more liberal regime is expected in the upcoming presidential elections. Thus, despite the strong medicine that the next government will have to apply to adjust the country, a more market-friendly direction with less state interference will be very beneficial to Argentina. For this year, we still see economic experts betting in a GDP drop from 1% up to 3% and escalate inflation and a risk of a possible max devaluation in the short term, depending on the new government to be elected. So this is the scenario for the cement industry. In terms of Brazil, after the excitement of the new fiscal framework presented by the government and initial signs of interest rate cut, the local reality is back in people's mind. At the same time, the government is trying to move two important levers, which will greatly impact the cement industry. First, the Minha Casa Minha Vida, a low-income housing program, where the government plans to build 2 million houses until 2026 in order to reduce the current housing deficit of 7.8 million houses. In fact, the recent Minha Casa Minha Vida changes boosted affordability significantly. Demand already reached React and mortgage totally 11 billion reais since the changes. Currently, the 420-month mortgage represented 75% of the housing loans in the planned FGTS future for November of this year. That is the use of FGTS deposit against the mortgage payments shall boost demand even further. Important to say that players in this sector are confident about the commitment of the government to the program. The second lever that will impact the cement industry favorably is the PAC, the PAC, Program for Growth Acceleration, where the government considers investing 6 billion reais a year from 2024 to 27, therefore totally 240 billion reais in this period, in areas such as transportation, urban infrastructure, communication, social equipment, energy, and water and sanitation. Therefore, signs are that the second half for the cement industry in Brazil should be better. Overall, considering the downside and upside perspective on Brazil and Argentina, there is no way that we cannot be optimistic. Therefore, particularly for this year, we continue to pursue the view we shared in the past. View that means defending the position that we reached in 2022, last year.
Thank you, Paulo. I guess that now we can break for Q&A. Let me warm up this discussion with a couple of questions before we take questions from participants. As usual, let me just start by asking you, Zangari, the cash breakdown among the different perimeters at the end of second quarter.
Yes, certainly. We ended the quarter with a consolidated cash position of $171 million. Out of that amount, we had $37 million at Intercement Brazil, $94 million at Loma Negra in Argentina, and $17 million at the African cluster, plus $23 at the corporate level or holdcos.
Okay, thank you, Zanga. Let me also open the floor to other questions from our investors, bankers, and analysts. I would like to remember all that you may send your question via webcast. Okay, so the first question is from Stable, a company balance, and the question is about the difference between the results of Argentina. So we see an adjusted EBIT of 63 million for the second quarter that Loma Negra released, and we released 43 million for the quarter. And so I know that inflation can cause some distortions in the figures, but Zangari, can you comment a bit on this so that we can better understand the situation, please?
Yes, Maria, I guess you got the main reason for that. Needless to say that high inflation per se brings some distortions to the figures. It's also easy to note that when inflation rate and currency devaluation are decoupled, for instance, when inflation is much higher than currency depreciation, this distortion tends to increase. Therefore, this difference for adjusted EBITDA comes mainly from the conversion mechanism. In other words, it has to do with the way Loma Negra presented its figures in US dollars. Note that for statutory reasons, Loma Negra is obliged to present its financials only in pesos, something according to the requirements of the New York Stock Exchange. However, in order to give a better flavor of its figures in US dollars for investors, as it may be a bit confusing to follow the high inflationary financials in pesos, the company takes its financials in pesos for any given period and convert them into US dollars using the historical pesos amount converted into dollars with the exchange rate for the quarter, which was 232 pesos per dollar. As you note, Loma is using this methodology for years now, and it certainly provides some reasonable comparability in terms of Loma Negra's figures in U.S. dollars. On the other hand, at Intercement holding level, when we consolidate Loma Negra financials, we are obliged to follow IAS 21 or IFRS conversion rules for an inflationary environment. Therefore, we take Loma Negra financials in pesos, which is Loma's functional currency, and adjust the financials by inflation using the proper monetary adjustment as required by the accounting rules in the amount of $13 million for this last quarter. To convert it to US dollars as the reporting currency, and we use the end of period exchange rate for that, which was 270 pesos per dollar, which implies a decrease of $7 million in the result when compared to the conversion made at the average exchange rate used by Loma. In other words, as Intercement has the US dollars as its reporting currency, we have to follow the proper accounting rules from IAS. In summary, the difference between the result published by Loma, $63 million, and that published by us, $44 million, is basically the effect of this hyperinflationary adjustment that amounted to $13 million in the quarter, as well as the difference in the conversion rate, which generates a decrease of $7 million in that result. Clear?
Yes, thank you, Zangan.
Well, I guess that we have a series of questions that was sent by Enmil from Bank of America, trying to go through them quickly. First one with regards to prices. What price increase have you been able to implement in Argentina and Brazil? And what are your expectations for any more potential increases in the second half of the year? Have these been able to keep up in local currency terms with costs increase and decrease? Well, I guess that after the end of the second quarter, we try to implement a national price adjustment in July. And basically, with the exception of four states, all other states we have to go back because basically, you know, the market leaders here did not follow the price adjustments. Now we are also implement a new price adjustment based on the effect that we had in the diesel price. Diesel prices in Brazil were adjusted by roughly 26%. So the impact for us is going to be, you know, something like R2 per bag or R40 per ton. So we are implementing this new price adjustment at the end of the month. And in case if we are being able to keep up with local local currency terms with cost increase and decrease, I would say that by the results that you saw in the second quarter, especially in the case of Brazil, no. I guess that the market dispute in the Southeast region, which is the biggest region, with the highest purchase power in Brazil, but is the one with the lowest price level. So I guess the whole industry is suffering a little bit because of that. In Argentina, of course, that you have a kind of a time lag between, you know, adjustments and inflation. But the company is being able to do that. And recently, when we had the 20% devaluation of the peso, immediately, you know, in less than 24 hours, the company was able to repass, adjust into prices the impact that they had due to their dollar cost elements and increase price by 12%. So the idea is really try to neutralize inflation in FX variation in the second half of the year. Perhaps in some states are going to be easier to do that in Brazil than others. And Luma Negra will continue to follow its policy as market leader. Yeah. The second question posed by Anne is, could you please provide an update of full year 2023 expectations for CapEx and taxes? Can you confirm that interest payments on the debentures have also been included in the standstill that's currently in place until September and capitalized in the interim? Well, Zangari, whenever you want, you can jump. But basically, for CapEx here, we shall have an amount very, very similar to what we booked last year. So $115 million, a bit more, a bit less, but in that order of magnitude. And in terms of taxes, we had something around, I guess, $70 million last year, if I'm not mistaken. And this year should be much, much lower, not even half of that, something around $30 million. Okay. With regards to the debentures, in terms of InterCement holding company, IACP, basically we did not pay part of the interest. So it was 50 million reais, so roughly $10 million. And with regards to InterCement Brazil, the company did not pay the principal, around 207 million reais, plus the related interest of 230 million reais. So this is included in the standstill that we have going on. The third question, any other point here? Can we?
No.
Yeah. Okay. The other question, could you provide a breakdown of sales in Argentina and Brazil? Percentage by segment, formal residential infrastructure, and commercial / industrial. Well, this is a kind of a $1 zillion question due to the statistics in our countries. But basically, in Brazil, 58% currently are bags, so that goes into the retail. Formal and informal. We believe that the biggest part in here is informal. And 42% is bulk. 6% goes to construction companies. 22% goes to red mix. And 14% goes into the industry. And needless to say that the 6% of construction companies and the 14% of industry, part of that goes into infrastructure. Nowadays, our guess is that something around 12% of the cement volume goes into infrastructure. With regards to Argentina, breakdown is not that different. Basically, we are talking about 58% of bags go into the retail and 42% being bulks. I guess we had some months where bulk went up to 46%. And back 54%, but recently this is bulk is decreasing because government is a little bit more contained on that. Difficult to say, you know, also the breakdown in terms of Argentina. But roughly, it is estimated that the public, you know, amount of cement is around 20% of the total dispatch. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another way of analyzing the data is by dispatch channel, where distributors bag cements mainly represent 60%, concrete producers 30%. That is private and public works, construction companies 80%, also part public and part goes to private. So this is my kind of general idea, as I said, because statistics are not that you know, clear and clean in Brazil and Argentina. The next question, I mean, do you expect the sale of African assets to be completed before year end?
Oh, yeah. Objective answer, yes. But actually, it's hard to give a precise time frame for the approvals. But the fact is that now we are running the bureaucratic work of obtaining the competent authorities' approvals in both countries, South Africa and Mozambique, and also in China, by the way, which is quite advanced. There in Mozambique and South Africa, it's progressing well. But as I said, it's bureaucratic. The buyer is interacting with those competent authorities to give them all needed information for them to have the process analyzed and finally approved. So it could happen in September, but it's more likely that it will be in the fourth quarter. And as I said, we expect it to be before the year end.
Good. Next question. I mean, the accountants comment in the financial statements regarding the situation of Intercement as an ongoing concern. Is this more a formality on the accountants that they have to include, given the current financial situation, that negotiations of the company? That's also an important question. I guess a key point here to highlight is that, as you know, our senior notes, our bonds, they matured in July of 24. However, the banks, they do have a call option to anticipate the debentures maturity into May. Therefore, we are talking about a period now of less than a year. And because of that, yes, accounts, they did have to include that paragraph of emphasis, not a qualified opinion, only a paragraph of emphasis. Basically pointing out this about ongoing concern. However, from a company's point of view, as you can see, I mean, no change in terms of its operations performance, and also with regards to the debt position, besides the one that was taken in Argentina, basically, that was already mentioned. So it is really a kind of formality based on the, you know, short-term liabilities that the company is going to face in the next 360 days. Mm-hmm.
So next question comes from UBS, asking us if the process of IPO of the Brazilian operation is in our outlook and what would be the timing. And yes, Rafael, as we have always mentioned, that's part of the liability plan that can be one of the initiatives for increasing liquidity and restructuring the capital of the company, of the holdco. For almost 2 years now, the market is closed and banks are starting to say that maybe early next year and definitely sometime next year, the market should be again favorable for an IPO of Brazilian companies. So that may be an option. It's not discarded, but there is no decision taken on that, as you all also know. But at the same time, since July 2021, when we almost had the Brazilian Unity IPO, the company is managed as it was already a listed company. So it's ready to go into that path, if that's the case, and the market is favorable for that outcome. Right, Paulo?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right.
Another question coming from Esteban is regarding whether the $234 million disclosed as the net asset value of the African assets for the second quarter is what would be expecting in terms of net proceeds. Esteban, well, what we have disclosed is the price of the agreed at the SPA, which is $265 million in terms of enterprise value. And as it's usual, this amount will be discounted by net debt when closing comes. And that may be higher or even lower than this amount. That shouldn't be that far, but that's just by coincidence because this is an accounting metric. And it will depend, as I said, on the cash generation until the closing of the transaction.
Well, trying here to summarize, you know, a couple of questions that we received, but basically they are in the direction that it's known that the advisors to a certain group of bondholders, they attempt to engage in discussions with Intercement aiming to explore or to prospect a mutually acceptable solution for the company's indebtedness. However, so far such an engagement has not happened. Therefore, asking us to comment on the company's position. Well, it's important to refresh here that all payments due with respect to the 2024 senior notes, they have been made. Therefore, the company is not in default under the notes or even their governing indenture, because the company paid on time and in full the semi-annual interest coupon that was due last July. Therefore, although we highly, of course, appreciate the offer, we do not believe that discussions with the bondholders' advisors are necessary at this time, as we do have a very good idea about what bondholders would like to have. Also, important is to refresh that we publicly announced the standstill obtained from the debenture holders, deferred certain payments to September. And therefore, the company continue its discussions with the three banks that are holding the debentures. And needless to say that this continues to be the company's priority at this time. Moreover, I mean, depend on the solution of its debentures, we may have scenarios where the company does not need even to engage with the bondholders' advisors, you know. So in summary, Intersemente continues to focus on the upcoming expiration of the standstill in September. And at the same time, we all can rest assured that the company will be the first to engage with the bondholder advisor in case we deem it necessary. Also, another question is in the direction of some media articles, and it's known by the market and also posted by the press that a strategic player has made an offer to purchase Intersemente. Some investors and lenders believe that such offer would address Intersemente's balance sheet issues, and they are asking us to comment on such allegations. As a principal, let me say that Intersemente management and its board of directors will always manage, as we have always done, always manage the company in according with our fiduciary duties under the applicable law. Therefore, any serious offer will always be contemplated internally. However, it's also important to say that Intersemente will not engage with investors with regards to any alleged offers concerning the company or any of its assets, particularly those that would constitute material no public information. But be sure that we are taking a 360-degree look around.
One maybe last question from Lorena, asking whether how are the negotiations with the banks progressing as we approach the end of the standstill?
Well, as you know, I guess that advisors and banks, they are talking on almost on a daily basis. And at this point in time, I'm not sure if we are going to be able to have a deal before the due date of the standstill. And therefore, very likely, we may have to roll over the standstill and hopefully get a kind of a quick convergence on the different views in here. You know, if this is going to take place before or after the proceeds of the African sale happens, difficult to say. Hopefully we have something before. But even if it's after, I don't see a big, you know, impact in here. And she's also asked about any update of the potential exchange of the bonds that you can share with us. Yeah, I mean, as we mentioned before, we are concentrating, you know, the whole attention, the whole focus, priority is really trying to strike something with the banks. We are very mindful about the situation with bondholders. And of course, that anything that could fly with the banks, we also want to make sure that it flies with bondholders. And therefore, it has to be something reasonable in here to all parts that are involved. And this is why, I mean, it's take longer than what we anticipated, but I guess it's moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Paul and Zangari, many thanks for this interesting Parasite Chat.
Yes, Maria, absolutely. Thank you again for hosting this. Thank you all for participating.
Yeah, guys, so many thanks for the day. Hopefully we can talk before the next earnings call, but have a great week. Thank you.